When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, we're back, Sykes and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. So Greg Pep is on the board. Matt Burns should be here in a bit. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures up 2. We were down most of the night, but now we're pretty much mixed. So I don't know what that tells us about the world, other than we're now mixed.
Did you see Trump tweeting about the dollar?
I don't think Trump knows anything about the dollar. The dollar has been strong as hell the last 2 months. Does he even know that?
He was talking about how if anybody wants, meaning the BRICS, want to create a new currency, said, forget doing business with America. So... that was interesting.
Well, maybe he should stop printing them then, because only he did during his first.
That was. I think there were a few all caps in there. That was interesting to see. Over the weekend, the market was closed, but definitely some.
I think the
signaling
what you need to do to stop another currency is. But he's big on Bitcoin though. What do you think that is?
Bitcoin is the future.
Ah.
It's the technology of the future.
I don't know if you've
heard that yet.
Oh, I get that, yeah. It's a, I don't know whose future, but somebody's future.
There's also a big thing with, what's his name, the venture capitalist, Mark Andreessen. I guess he was on Joe Rogan and said that a lot of the tech founders had gotten debanked, so they were forced to use crypto. That was another thing going on over the weekend. That's already got, I think, 2 or 3 million views online.
They were debanked.
Yeah.
Who was?
Some of the people in charge of the crypto startups. The banks would just kick them out, and then I guess it was, or they implied it was an ideological thing, meaning they were debanking a lot of the.
So if I own a bunch of Bitcoin, Lakeside's going to kick me out, my regular account.
Andreessen said that because he was part of some crypto startups. He was backing a lot of crypto startups and other people like, I think, Brian Anderson, the CEO of Coinbase, and even Barron Trump and Melania Trump, I guess, were debanked. So it was an interesting interview.
Well, we debanked people here that were in the marijuana business, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people actually came out online and were saying, hey, that happened to me too. It wasn't just Andreessen.
So you know who was somewhat debanked and was able to get their own portal. Portal. How's that for? We're going to talk sports here today. Their own portal into the Fed is the Clearing Corps.
Nice.
I don't know if you knew that or
it's
not.
It's good to be them.
Well, back when we're trying to do something with our banking system, and the stuff that the changes that have gone on with it the last few years, the Dodd-Frank and all that stuff. I mean, to me, I think it's just messed the whole thing up. But not entirely, of course. But if you just deposit a bunch of money in there, because the Clearing Corps, anytime you do an option trade or a futures trade or whatever, or stock trade, you think you're doing it, your position is with the clearing corp. So the clearing corp essentially manages the money back and forth from different places, and sometimes they have a real lot of cash at night, and sometimes they don't. So they would drop a huge check sometime into a bank, but because of Dodd-Frank, if it came in with the maybe might leave 2 or 3 days later, it's considered like hot money or something.
Hot money?
Yeah.
Strip club?
No, actually, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to bring in, God, it'll be a, everybody's snoozing. I want to do that. I'll bring in a copy of Monetary History of the United States by Milton Friedman and go back in the day.
Enthralling stuff.
They used to call.
Rather watch paint dry.
M1 used to be, some of M1, they used to call it hot money. Money that could fly back and forth, essentially a checking account. And anyway, but so the OCC, if they wanted to drop, say, $100 million or $500 million into, like J.P. Morgan, they had to call Jamie Dimon, personally or something. Because he'd have to
approve it. His cell phone?
He'd have to, approve it. Because they'd have to have more capital to accept it.
So they'd have to have... No, they wouldn't.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's part of the regulations.
Wouldn't that just part of it be towards... The new money would go towards the reserves?
No, they needed... that approval, because they would need more capital, because the money would be going. It wasn't considered, money you could make loans on. It was considered hot money. I don't know what the definition was, but it was weird. So here you have banks that don't want to give people loans, and you can't give them money.
And you can't give them money.
Yeah, so what exactly is a bank? You can't give them money, and you can't get a loan out of them.
They're a tax on poor people.
Yeah, they're a tax on poor people, whatever they are.
Fees.
So they ended up saying, okay, if that's your issue, we can just deposit it right with the Fed.
Well, didn't Milton Friedman talk about how there would be a digital currency one day?
No.
You sure?
Wasn't with him every moment. I hit him for a couple of classes. I went to all his lectures.
No, I'm talking about later.
Oh, maybe.
Once computers came around.
I think what he was talking about is if anything, no matter what it is, currency especially derives its value from its scarcity. So the more you put in circulation, the less valuable it is based on other stuff. And I think our people in Washington, and I hope our incoming president, understand that. Sometimes you wonder if they do or not. So if you double the amount of currency in a system, all you're going to do is double all the prices, because everything is in relation to everything else. But we seem to have people that don't get that, and it's pretty darn simple. It just takes a while to figure it out, I guess. But, that's the issue that they have when they do this stuff. So you can't just print. I mean, it would be real easy.
I think the Bitcoin guys and Milton Friedman might get along real well.
Well,
they would have been complaining the entirety of 2008 and 2009.
But one of the basic tenets of currency theory, and I did some of this, was a long time ago. One of the basic tenets of currency theory is that whatever a currency is, someday it will drop down to its basic value. And the classic paper on that was concentration camps.
What?
You want to say? So what was their currency?
Cigarettes?
Yeah. But the cigarette had a value.
Yeah.
I mean, not necessarily to me. I don't smoke, but...
Let's see if I can do Milton.
In those days,
Friedman,
it had a value. So
digital,
so like
currency.
If they had it, a pint of booze was 20 cigarettes.
Okay. Everything here's was. This is a interesting source. Said Nobel laureate Milton Friedman predicted Bitcoin era 17 years ago.
What was the prediction?
Let me see the quote. American economist and Nobel Prize winner in economic science Milton Friedman has aptly predicted the rise of digital currency in 1999. Here's the quote. The one thing that's missing but that will soon be developed is a reliable e-cash, a method where buying on the internet you can transfer funds from A to B without A knowing B or B knowing A. The way in which I can take a $20 bill and hand it over to you and there's no record of where it came from.
Yeah, that's not what we have.
That without knowing who I am, the
except
kind of thing.
Every
that
transaction
will
of Bitcoin
on the
is
internet.
Every transaction of Bitcoin is you can trace.
Well, you trace it by number.
Yeah.
Hold on, I need to come in the other room here.
All right. We have Matt Byrne has arrived. So, Matt, how are you? As soon as he gets his headphones on. Greg is scurrying around the office. I think he might have predicted is if everybody degrades their currency, there could be a competing currency, but it has to be based on something. Anyway, the whole thing fell apart when the soldiers, the Allies, made it to the concentration camps and just dumped a whole bunch of cigarettes on everybody.
They deserve it after that.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, but now all of a sudden the system broke down, which was fine, you know, because like, you know, 20 cigarettes were a blanket, or 30 might have been a pillow. I mean, there was a base currency, and the dollar used to be based on gold. It used to be. I still have. God, I should dig it out. I think I still have a $1 silver certificate. You ever see one of those?
No.
Instead of saying Federal Reserve note, it says silver certificate.
Not anymore.
No, God, no. But I mean, the point is, it's still based on something. You know, I mean, we have aircraft carriers, we have bridges, we have stuff. Now, what they're doing with it, you know, I'm the big.
How many trillions of dollars we got in? In what, M3?
I will find it. I will find it for you. I'll go to the debtclock.org and I will find it. That's why. I mean, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, you know, if there was a competing currency, but it would have to be based on something. I mean, that's why.
Well, how many dollars are there?
Let me find it here. Wait for a second. You see, can I at least dig here for a second? But the I'm saying is. If something was based on, we'll call it a pappus.
Nice. I like this already.
Yeah, you like this already. We'll call it a pappus. And a pappus is good for a gallon of oil, say.
It's good for two beers.
Or two beers, whatever it is. Yeah. As long as whatever it is, if it's a gallon of oil, if something like that, if we and the rest of the world keeps doing what we're doing with the currencies, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if somebody has one. But then someday, you get to walk in and say, by the way, where's my gallon of oil, right?
Can I create these on demand?
They can be created. I mean, that's the whole point.
I was thinking maybe the dollars are now based on nuclear warheads. So if we have 4,000 or 3,500 warheads and $3 trillion.
But that's why the dollar still has some value. Okay, currency and credit derivatives. M2 money supply now, $21 trillion.
$21 trillion, huh?
In 2000, it was 4.9.
Wow.
Now, there's no way. So that's what? Four times. Okay, that's 4.5 times.
What? 3, 6, 9, 12 zeros?
Yeah. So what I'm saying, but so that's four, a little over four times. There's no way that our GDP is four times higher.
So that's
so the
like,
difference is going to be
it's like inflation. $6 billion per warhead.
Right. Gross domestic product now is $29 trillion. Let's see what it was in 2000. I will. I should be able to get the time machine here. In 2000, it was. Where am I? It's always on different spots, but it was 10. So the domestic product is up. Is up what? Three times. And the money supply is up 4.5.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Where's Apple trading is the real question.
Today?
Well, or no, they're not the most. They're not the biggest company. Where's Nvidia trading?
Nvidia is 137, down 72 cents.
72 cents, that's
yeah.
It. Well, I guess we're okay then.
Well, I guess. What I'm saying is that's why you can't. I mean, here's the thing. I mean,
the most important thing now, as far as I'm concerned, are A, nuclear warheads, B, dollars, and maybe C, NVIDIA.
It's not the nuclear warheads. It's delivery, and do they all work? The thing you have to maintain from what I understand, is the...
Russia's got a bunch, too.
Well, I know, but you have to maintain what's the thing that makes them explode? I think the stockpile in there, you don't have to maintain.
Oh, damn.
Whatever is the exploder part has to be maintained and changed periodically. So, so there you go.
That's between us, Russia, and China maybe.
Well,
we got a lot of currency.
Britain's got some.
Yeah.
Israel's probably got some. India's got some, right? France has got some. Germany's got some. don't know who maintains all these things. I mean, I have no idea if the ICBM missile silo is like in Minnesota, if you just fire one up tomorrow and it would actually work. I mean, I don't know how much that stuff's maintained, or I assume the stuff that they send out on submarines is maintained. But why would you send it out?
I mean, did I ever tell you about my friend who
was
a nuclear engineer on the submarine?
I'm not hearing you.
Oh.
I'm not hearing Greg.
He cut me off. Help.
We're both cut off, I think. Matt, we were doing fine until you did something over on your end.
Something I did.
Nothing we
did.
I
didn't touch it.
I don't know. Maybe Matt was on a bender this weekend or something.
Nice.
Yeah, you guys sound good.
Well, anyway, the numbers here are, we're up to $36 trillion on the national debt. Well, why'd you make me get up and look on this page? So the debt per taxpayer is up to $271,000. That's a lot of money.
It's only going up.
Debt per citizens, 106. So that's why I got kicked off of Jonas Esposito's show.
The youth are going to have something to say about that in about 20 years.
Well, she said she had no debt, and I said, well, we all sort of do.
We don't have any debt.
And I said, well, Joan, you sort of do. And she goes, why? And I go, well, all of us do. We owe the government $106,000. By the way, you're a taxpayer. Make that $271,000. And she was very insulted.
How about that?
But nobody thinks of it like that. And that's what you sort of have to be careful in the when the new administration comes in, because Trump likes to look at things and solve problems that he thinks are there and not the real ones. And I'm not so sure he's all that up on all this stuff. I mean,
everyone's problems are real.
Yeah, but
to them.
I mean, one of the things in the last administration, the deficits of the U.S. government are way worse, which they have been under every president since God knows when. But they gave a lot of money, COVID and otherwise, to state and local places. So your state of Illinois and Chicago and places are better off than they were 4 to 6 years ago. Now, that doesn't make up for... So now, if Trump is going to lean on shoving that all back to the states and local and move it back to federal and decrease the deficit, okay, that's fine. But you're not looking at the total. And the total is all the different places. So if you end up, stop giving help to states for like Medicaid and stuff, the states have to pick it up and raise everybody's taxes. You really haven't gained anything. You have to make sure you're doing a total type of a thing on this. And I don't know that you are.
Or right? You can just inflate everything away.
Greg, why don't you look and see whether we're going out here or not? Because I don't know if we are or not.
What's going on? What do you need?
Why don't you dig on your phone and see if anybody can hear you and me.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, so the Bears are now looking for the perfect coach. This is like, this guy's been here 3 years. I thought Matt Nagy was the perfect coach, and I thought this guy was the perfect coach. How many perfect coaches would
it be funny if they decided to interview him again?
Yeah, I don't mean to. Can we figure out that it's not the coach?
Oh, yeah, we're out.
How many people do you think are... How many people do you think this guy possibly can hear? Kevin says he can hear us. So
I think Ben Johnson...
I don't know, it's internal, whatever our problems are.
Ben Johnson is the number one target. But
so why do you think... Well, Kevin's actually going to call in at some point, and we're going to go some of this... We're going to talk about some of the college stuff, so whenever he does. What do you think of while we're talking about sports, what do you think of the fight in the Michigan-Ohio State game?
I think it was probably a pretty bad idea to run in the center of the stadium with your flag and try to plant it. I don't know what they were really thinking like that.
Why at the end of the game did the players just not go to the locker room? The Michigan had won. Why don't they just all go to the locker room?
Because they wanted to go shake hands or whatever and plant the flag in the middle of the field.
But was that the players' idea?
Probably. They tried to do it in 2022 also. I mean, they really
Kevin
hate each other.
Kevin says he's connected to Zoom, but somehow we can't hear him.
They really hate each other.
What'd you do? Did you sabotage Matt over there? What'd you do?
I can't hear anything, Gremlins. But I can hear you.
Matt, do you want to go to break and fix all this stuff?
Yeah, let's see what we can do. Yeah, let's take a break and see what we can do.
Greg, why don't you find out what he's doing over there?
Do you have any lights on over there?
Yeah, let's go to a break real quick.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess they both got fined $100,000, eh?
They should. I mean, I don't know what happens. That's a non-starter with me. You can't do that.
The security people had to use
the mace,
and what's it? Pepper spray.
I wouldn't want to get in between those guys. They legitimately wanted to kill each other for a couple seconds.
Well, if you had a bunch of pepper spray and the coaches kept telling them to go to the locker room, they don't pay attention to coaches. Does anybody think any rule of any direction is beneath them now or what?
Well, they obviously that was completely on purpose, and I'm not surprised Ohio State came back into the middle. They're not going to let that, but just all around disaster.
Well, why didn't somebody tell the guy with the flag to just stop?
I'm guessing they wanted to do that. Tell the guy with the flag. They've done it before, and I guess they really wanted to. It wasn't enough to mess up their entire playoff hope. Now they got to put the flag in the middle of the field.
23.5-point dogs, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you watch any of the Irish game?
That was kind of an ass-kicking, wasn't it?
You had to stick there for 4 hours if you wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
That was pretty awful. The amount of commercials was absolutely devastating. But I mean, anybody who goes to South Bend and watches that game in the third week in December, good luck to you if you're going to sit there for 4 hours on those.
Did you see some of the Bears buzz that they might want to try to hire Freeman?
Why?
I don't know, but that was tossed out there a few times on Twitter.
I
want to
say the current guy is going to be the lowest paid head coach. He's also going to stay as the offensive coordinator. So they're going to save a guy, and they're probably paying him as least as possible. They're probably still paying
Eberflus. He's doing pretty good in my eyes. Why not let him? And nobody else is going to come here unless they pay him, you know, time and a half or whatever, hazard pay.
Well, I think what we should do is go to break. If you can tell Matt to go to break, and we'll see if we can fix everything. And come back, we should have Kevin and Jen. How does that sound?
Let's fix it.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while.
Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Greg Pappas' studio. We got Matt Byrne. Seems they've got whatever was wrong fixed, so we're good to go here. S&P futures down 275, NASDAQ futures up 350. We have Dow futures down 28. I don't really see much. I got Amazon up $1.95. I don't really see anything down on the Dow. Microsoft down at 101. So it looks like we got a kind of a dud morning here so far. We were half a day on Friday. We were up on Friday, which is somewhat the usual, the day after Thanksgiving. It's kind of rare we don't go up, but we did. The DAX up 218, that's 1%. FTSE up 29.3%. CAC up 7.1%. We're in Asia. The Nikkei up 304.8%. Hang Seng up 126.6%. Shanghai up 37, that's 1.1%. Australia hits a record high. We're at an all-time high. We've got to get Gene Easton back on here. Friday, Dow was up 188. S&P up 33. NASDAQ up 157. And kind of a dud day. It just went up and then stuck there all day. 10-year rate, 4.20. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.04. Japan up 1 basis point, 1.07. Oil up 82 cents, but still 68.82, under 70. Brent up 85 cents, 72.69. Natural gas down 19 cents, 3.16, even though it's cold out. RBOB up 2 cents, 192. We have gold retreating a little bit today, down 16 bucks, 26.64 at a big rally last week. Silver down 20 cents, 30.90. Copper unchanged at 4.13. Foreign exchange, the dollar is at 105 against the euro, pretty much unchanged. 126.9 against the pound. Dollar's been a lot stronger, but it's been kind of steady the last few days. We have crypto, which is was marching towards 100,000 at 98,000. Now it's down 1,700 today, 95,269. Greg, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Top Bears looking for a coach. You got your name in the hat?
Yeah, it's pretty brutal out there. It's currently 6:40 a.m. on December 2nd, 2024. Traffic from O'Hare to Jane Byrne, it's 43 minutes inbound on the Kennedy, outbound 17 minutes. Weather in Chicago, below freezing and clear skies this morning at 14 at O'Hare. Later today, a high of around 29 with a chance of flurries. We'll be below freezing for the entire day. Down in Phoenix, 54 degrees, clear skies. Later in the day, high of 80 and sunny skies. In the NFL yesterday was week 13 of the 2024 season. Yesterday saw the Vikings beat the Cardinals 23-22. And tonight we see the Browns play Broncos at 7:15 p.m. Central Time. So I got Chief back to you.
Do we have Kevin? Do we have Jan?
We do indeed.
Yes.
We got the boat of you guys. We're having a little struggling here a little bit. Whenever it gets really cold, the board starts to act up here. And it's cold. You guys warm? Or are you cold?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm warm for now.
All right. Well, you're coming in a light. Matt's gonna have to turn you up a little bit.
A guy on the way this morning. So.
Matt's gonna have to up your guys' gain a little bit because I can barely hear you, but I can hear you. What So, Kevin, John, why don't we let Kevin take us through this college playoff thing? Who does what where? Would everybody lose them this weekend, except for the Irish didn't, with a couple of, looked like they might, and then they got a couple of interception returns. How come in pro or college they don't give you the benefit of the 3 or 5 yards in the end zone? In pro, they do.
Does it matter? Does it matter?
Well, in pro, they do.
Okay.
Just saying. I mean,
of all the things to discuss from the weekend, that would be pretty low on my list.
And it's no big deal. I just thought it was kind of odd that it was inconsistent. Of course, everything's inconsistent.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a whole lot of rules that are different from college and pro, so I don't know why that would be any different. What Tom's talking about is if you intercept the ball 3 yards into the end zone and return it for a touchdown, in the NFL, that's a 103-yard interception return. In college, it's just considered a 100-yard length of the field.
Right. In any case, they had a 99 and a 100 in like 2 minutes, and it took them, a century to do the other 99s, two 99s, right?
Well, no, they had a lot of yards, Tom. I mean, you know, both teams ran up a lot of yardage. So I don't think it took them that long to, you know, it probably took them about the first quarter to get their first 99.
No, I'm talking about the interception returns. The one guy in, was it 1916?
Oh, yeah. I see.
Was 99, and then Luther Bradley was 97 when I was there.
Yeah, I remember. I was at that game.
Yeah. So now with all these people losing and stuff, you and I were talking yesterday, until you pointed it out, I thought I was just plain wrong. Which I am a lot. When you look at the Big Ten standings now, it's just one column. I used to be, not that long ago, where they had East and West. They played like different schedules, right? You played everybody in your division, played a few guys on the other side. And then the conference championship was East versus West or North versus South, depending on the
conference. Whatever the divisions were called, yeah. And in fact, that was the criterion for having a conference championship game was you had to split into divisions and you had to play division champs to stage that game. And I think that changed back when a bunch of teams left the Big 12 and the Big 12 was left with like 8 teams. And they said, well, we're not going to split into divisions of 4, so can we modify the rules so that we can just play our top 2 teams? Now that's what everybody does, except for the Sun Belt Conference. The Sun Belt Conference is still in divisions, and the Sun Belt will be playing division champions Marshall and Louisiana this weekend. But everybody else, they just put their top 2 teams into a championship game, the top 2 teams in their standings, and they tell them to play for a championship. Now, I get why they do that for TV rating, for TV money. I get why they do that for staging the event, because I'm sure they will sell out or come close to selling out a lot of these conference championship games. But in a football sense, why does it make any sense to take your top 2 teams when they're going to be in this college football playoff anyway, with the exception potentially of Clemson? But if they're going to be in this playoff situation anyway, why are you going to make them play an extra game? That it just makes no sense to me from the football point of view. But that's what they're doing. You know, Penn State and Oregon are going to play, and okay, have at it. Go ahead. But if you want them to win a championship, they're going to have to play 4 more games or 3 more games for your team that gets a bye the first week. They're going to have to play a lot more games. Why are you going to do this? It makes no sense. In fact, if they talk about, like at the end of the season in the NFL, the teams that have already made the playoffs sitting their guys down, that might make a whole lot of sense for some of these teams.
I don't know what Matt's doing over there with the he's on the cough button. I don't know what he's doing over there coughing, but we're struggling here a little this morning, but we're back pretty much. So, Kevin, now there's 12 teams in the playoffs. Explain that. Now, do the conference champions get the top 4, or is it the top 4 people?
The 4 highest-rated conference champions get the first 4 spots, the first 4 seeds in the tournament.
So if Notre Dame was number 1, they'd still...
It could be, say, Oregon and Texas and let's pick another one, Oregon, Texas. I suppose it could be SMU if they're 13-1, whatever it is. If they be, assuming they beat Clemson, it could be those. But it could just as well be Boise State as a conference champion, who could be rated one of better than the Big 12 champion, for example.
But Boise State's now in the Pac-10, right?
No, Boise State is in the. Let me find it. Just check it. Boise.
They're not the Mountain West,
State
are they?
Is in the Mountain West. They're 11-1. People think very highly of them. They have some pro prospects. So it's entirely conceivable that they will be one of the highest ranked conference champions, even though they're from a lesser conference. So if you look at the poll rankings, because they won't come out. I didn't even know if they're going to do it this week. They won't come out with the playoff committee rankings, which is kind of stupid in its own.
I thought that was even not till next Sunday.
But if you look, let's find Boise in here. Yeah, it probably is. There's probably a selection show next Sunday. If we look at Boise, they're ranked number 10 right now in the rankings. So SMU's ahead of them. Georgia, Tennessee, Ohio State, but each conference is only going to get one of the, you're not going to get multiple top four seeds. So the SEC is only going to get one team in those top four.
So if Clemson somehow
going
wins,
to be whoever their game winner this week is.
So if Clemson
could be Georgia, could be Texas.
Well, if Clemson somehow wins this, and everybody knows they pretty much suck. They'll be in the playoffs, but they won't be one of the top four, probably.
They are not going to be one of the top four. Clemson would not, for instance, would not leapfrog Boise State, assuming Boise State wins its game this week.
All right, but if this will never happen, probably. But if the Irish ever were number one in the country by far, they would never be in the top four.
Their highest would be a number five seed. So they're in the polls yesterday. They came out number four, but they're not going to be a number four seed.
Right, so if they are a number five, then they'll play number 12. Who do you suppose that's going to be? Sort of like South Carolina or somebody?
Well, it could be, yeah. It's going to be somebody decent. There's going to be 12 good teams in this thing. It's just a matter of whom. And it's going to be a team that can beat anybody, as we saw with Michigan knocking off Ohio State. So, Michigan is kind of fits that category of talented underachievers. So does Southern California, and you saw that they gave Notre Dame a tussle for a while, for a long while in that game.
Yeah.
Talented underachievers are dangerous. So, you can look at a team like Alabama. If Alabama gets in with three losses, they're going to be a dangerous team because they have a lot of talent. And sometimes it all comes together for one game.
I wouldn't want to see them in South Bend, Alabama.
No, but they probably aren't up for the South Bend weather either. So
neither was San Francisco yesterday. And how good is this guy Josh Allen?
San Francisco did not look like they wanted to be there last night.
How good is that guy Josh Allen? Boy, he reminds me of Ryder Staubach.
Really,
he can do everything.
He's really good. And he, a couple of years in, people were ready to write him off, and he really came on strong.
Do you think Flanagan's going to get the Bears job?
Yeah, the Bears job, it tickles me that, some of the things that come out for that. First of all, somebody out there is floating the name Marcus Freeman. I really like Marcus Freeman a lot, and he's come a long way as a coach. But he's a first-time head coach in college in his third year. He's still not what I would consider a finished product.
No, I don't either.
I think he's a really talented guy who will become, and I'm saying, I'm confident that he's just going to keep getting better as a coach, but he ain't ready for the NFL. And so whoever's floating his name out there, it wouldn't surprise me if it's his agent, looking for an extension, is doing it. But the other thing that I keep reading is that the Bears are going to be looking for somebody who fits in the category of leader of men. Is it? Wait a minute. Hasn't that been the criterion all along?
I mean, how is it? I mean, Nagy was our guy, then this guy's our guy, now the next guy's going to be the guy. How do they just diss the guy they just picked as being a total loser, and it was all his fault? I mean, none of this runs up the chain?
You want to know the best thing about what they did?
We still can't hear you, Greg.
The
Well, Greg's saying, I can hear Greg, so Greg, I can translate for you.
Yeah, the best thing about what they did was they forgot to call off that press conference in the morning. So while they're talking about the leadership future or whatever, the best example of the Bears in general is them completely forgetting to tell him to stay away from the microphone that morning.
Yeah, is the Bears allowing Eberflus to go do his weekly press conference when he was as good as fired. Now, I suppose you could say that he met with the Bears brass at the beginning of the in the morning before that, and that they were going to go away and huddle and decide what to do. And while they did, he did his press conference. I don't know. I don't care. It was stupid, but very unprofessional. So
surprise.
They look like the Keystone Cops again. What I do, my observation of the Bears from afar is it looks like Kevin Warren is now flexing his muscles a little bit. And what that does is, even if he's, assuming they plan to keep Ryan Poles, that Ryan Poles is no longer the general manager. He's the director of player personnel, even if they call him general manager. He is essentially the director of player personnel, which a lot of teams have, and Kevin Warren is running the show. I suspect that's a good thing for the Bears, because the last time anybody not named McCaskey or Hallis had the keys, it was Jim Finks. So if Kevin Warren's driving the car, I feel a little bit better about the Bears than I would have if they had gone status quo on the coaching search.
I got a big time question as we wander in through this NIL stuff. With the big fight in OSU and Michigan, when do you get to the point where you can find the players if they're all making money?
Seems like you ought to be able to, doesn't it?
Sure does, doesn't it?
Except that their relationship with their schools, technically, and with the NCAA, technically, is that their student athletes who are participating in an extracurricular activity. So I don't see where the school or the NCAA can find them. They don't have that kind of employment relationship with them. Another very clunky part of this whole stupid setup.
This is going to have to change at some point here, I would think. Well, it looked to me like it was. It shows you that the coaches aren't in charge of these guys. They don't pay attention to coaches.
Well, it's not the first time that somebody has tried to plant a flag. It is, Michigan State did it at Notre Dame several years back.
They did it 2 years ago also, at 2022. Yeah.
This has happened, a lot over the years, and there are times when it has turned into a brawl in the past. It's getting a lot of attention this weekend because there were like three of them. So.
Well, when you start having the security people having the mace and pepper spray to players, that's got to be a first.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a problem. But you remember during the Holtz years, Notre Dame getting into a brawl in the tunnel with Miami, another one in the tunnel with Southern California. This is not new.
Well, I think it is.
It's just getting a lot of attention.
At the end of the game, when you won, if you're the visiting team, why don't you just leave? Well, that's what a locker room is for. And what is the guy doing running around?
I would agree, but this is the big rivalry, and we want to say we own you. And the way we own you is by, we can't put a brand on you. So instead, we'll just plant our flag. That's what they're doing. Now, again, I think Michigan's guys were in the wrong for doing it. It was classless. I also don't feel too sorry for the butthurt Ohio State fans who only the week before had their team run up the score on Indiana by lining up in victory formation and then running a play for a touchdown.
That was a little weak.
That was pretty classless too. So you want respect, you got to deserve it. So all of it is just it's stupid stuff. That's all.
Well, I just kind of wonder who's in charge. I mean, what is this thing? Oh, you texted me the guy on TV. What was the four? I won't say the four idiots, but the four guys that are on at halftime or after the game. You gotta have like four guys talking about the game. The big black guy on the left said something about you got to fire the Ohio State coaches. He's got the $20 million payroll and he lost. I'm thinking, okay, that's interesting.
And what did I text you?
Well, you said the pros are 255. What makes you think it's only 20? How do they even know?
Well, I didn't say what makes you think it's 20. I said if it's 20, that's not appalling. Hell, they're getting off cheap. the NFL salary cap is, what, 255 or 355?
But, I mean, does anybody even know what with all the different people are? And who do they write the check out from this basketball thing? I mean, when I heard that they're going to contribute $1 million to people's NIL fund, who do you give the money to?
Well, they're going to designate it for some collective or another, and I have no idea because nobody's talking about that. I haven't found anything in print about it. So it's going someplace, but it's not, you know, it can't go to the university, so it's got to go someplace.
So the collective has to be, they have to be a some sort of a corporation or tax-paying entity to accept that money, don't they?
Yeah, and I believe they are. I think most of them are.
Some of them are trying not to be by doing the kids go to the college or the hospitals at night and they paid $600 an hour to talk to kids or something.
Yeah, that's a different construct, but they're not laundering, and laundering's the right word, they're not laundering $1 million through that particular construct because otherwise they'll be doling it out in bits and pieces. So I would suggest this. Do you think that a 3-year commitment to a multi-team event in Las Vegas that will pay a minimum of $1 million to the NIL fund. Do you think that had anything to do with Notre Dame signing the number 6 recruiting class in the country in basketball, given their most recent basketball non-success?
Yeah.
A little, yeah.
But then again, what good is that doing? A guy can leave after a year.
Well, it gets you a good team for a year.
I think it gets you
your next recruiting class.
I think you and I could probably make an argument with some of these schools. Of course, Notre Dame would never listen to anybody. That's the way they are. I think you make an argument for just stopping all recruiting. Just get everything from everybody else. I mean, for years, people never recruited high school kids. Some schools.
Tom, I think that's a bad model. You can't completely turn over your team every year like that.
I'm not saying it would be the best model, but Dr. Chase Bro, Pete, who's on TV a lot, used to be. He's one of the biggest changes in college football was saying you have to graduate from a junior college. This was in the 80s or something. I'm like, Pete, what the hell are you talking about? Or the 90s. He goes, some schools, they've never had a high school player. He was it Utah State, Montana State?
Kansas State was known for that, for stocking. But they get them, and then they keep them around for 2 to 3 years.
Well, I mean, you get somebody out of junior college, but they never even wanted a high school kid. They don't want any of that stuff. But, I mean, you know, Illinois, Ohio, we're not big on junior colleges here that have teams. Apparently, the rest of the country does. There's a lot of junior colleges that have, I don't know, any junior college here has a football team, do you, of any kind of class.
I'm sure there's something in the Midwest, but I'll be damned if I know what it is.
Well, when Dr. J went to one, I think he went to one in Kansas or someplace. I mean, some state other than Minnesota. And I said, Jen, these guys, what are you? And he went from there to the, where the hell are you going to play? Gustavus Division II school up in, but he went to a junior college. He said, yeah, these guys would all be in class. And the day after the last football game, he wouldn't see the guy because he was going to go work for his dad's, you know, electric firm or something, and he was in school just to play football, and after the last game, he was gone. A lot of those guys.
Yeah, well, and that was even true at the four-year school level. The guys who were going to leave, they'd check out. They would check out as soon as their season was over. That was the last anybody saw of them. To a point, it is, but, you know, most of them are grad students now because the NCAA did react to that by creating this, academic success rate metric that they have to meet in order to be eligible for postseason play.
Well, who is in charge? If somebody's going to write $1 million check to the quote the collective or the NIL, and you've got 5 or 6 different collectives, who's in charge of who gets what? Is he a university guy or is there a collective board?
I can't tell you because there's been nothing written about that I've been able to find.
There must be something going somewhere because the check's going someplace.
The check is going someplace.
So when are we able to find individual players? I think you can do it now. Is anybody not making money, you think?
I'm sure they still have some like people on the training staff or something, students that they can still take advantage of.
Well, I was reading. Greg sent me text or whatever. That when is this 105 people total on? We essentially stop and walk ons. We have 105 people on roster, and that's it.
I don't think that's a done deal.
But that's where people want to go. I thought it was 85. Now it's 105.
Well, I think you can have a roster of 105, and you can have 85 on scholarship.
For those that don't know, I mean, you could walk on to Notre Dame and practice and so forth and not have a scholarship and be
and
there.
You could be Rudy.
Yeah, you could be Rudy, and you can suit up and stuff, and you know, I don't know how many people, what the score would have to be before you ever got in, but you get to suit up and stuff. And now they're saying that if you're not on scholarship, but why, if people get enough money, why do you even have to be on scholarship?
I don't know why anybody would care.
Well, that's the thing. That's what they're trying to stop, right? They're saying you can't have, 130 people just because some are paying their own tuition and because you're giving them so much money and whatever. They're saying there's going to be a roster limit, basically, like there is in pro. And
yeah, because I guess what they're saying is you can, if you're not on scholarship but you're getting paid $100,000, what difference does it make?
Yeah, and I sort of agree with that, wouldn't you?
I think that would be a really nice way to work around the rules, don't you?
Yeah, well, they still...
And nobody would ever do that. Everybody would line up with the spirit of the rules, I'm sure.
Do they still have the, for lack of a better term, they still have the piggy move-up scholarships for... This is going to sound like it's 100 years ago, but it wasn't that long ago. Every sport in college, for those that don't know or never heard this, they're kind of ranked in terms of importance money-wise. So when you have, if you have 85 scholarships, say in football, if you grab a kid from the soccer team and he's on a soccer scholarship and he's kicking for you, you got to switch him to a football scholarship and count him, right? They used to have to.
Couldn't tell you how that works anymore.
Yeah, I mean anymore. I don't know because I mean, you couldn't just put five football players on the baseball team and have them come out for football and miraculously make the squad. You'd have to change
that. The way I remember the rule was that not that you had to count them for football, but they had to complete a season in their sport first. So you can bring him in for football if you want, but he's got to play. He's got to spend a year playing baseball first before he can come out for football.
Well, I think there was a pecking order. The football player could play basketball or baseball wherever he wanted to play. The basketball player can't play football, but he can play baseball. And a baseball player, I guess, could run track or something, but you couldn't move up and whatever. It was based on the revenue of the sport, I think, Kevin. So, I mean, you're free. Like Samardzija was free to pitch on the baseball team. If he was a pitcher, I don't think he was free to play and without having a football scholarship.
Well, Jordan Faison is on a lacrosse scholarship, and he's playing football.
Well, I'm saying, I bet this all went the way of the dodo bird with all this other stuff, right? I think there's probably a big difference with that now. Well, Kevin, why don't we we'll let you dash, and then
let's turn it over to John.
And then we'll turn it over to John. We're going to go to a quick break, and these guys get a little more work to do here, and then we'll be right back, John, for you, and you can hang with Audrey as well. So we'll talk about other stuff.
Sure.
We'll be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. You know I love you, baby. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Lucas, it wasn't my fault, I swear to God!
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. At Burn of the Board, Greg Pappas in the studio. We have Mr. John Flanagan. John, you know the story behind that song, don't you?
That's Steve Goodman, right?
Yeah, and it was demanded to be given by Arlo Guthrie, by the guy who used to own The Quiet Night. Have you knew that or not?
Local story. Yeah. That's a great song.
Yeah. Now, my question about Steve Goodman is he had his ashes... what do you do with ashes? Spread at home plate in Wrigley Field. And the next year they tore up the field, put a new field in, so now he's in the dump somewhere, huh? I don't know if I'd like that so much.
Rather insensitive, I would say.
This casting of ashes around, I don't get it. When it's my turn, I want my grave.
There's a lesson to be learned there, Tom.
Yeah, I know. It's everything is kind of fleeting or whatever. So what do you think? We've got interesting weekend and our president going out and president coming in. The president going out has pardoned his kid, which is interesting. And the president coming in has put a guy in charge of... Chris, does the guy even realize that that he appointed the guy who's there now and he's supposed to serve 10 years?
You mean Ray?
Yeah.
Well,
he was a Trump appointee, wasn't he?
Yeah, after he fired Comey.
Yeah.
But, you know, they serve at the pleasure of the president. If they're not canned, they can serve for 10 years. But then that doesn't mean they're going to, so.
But, I mean, people would assume that he wasn't his employee or appointee, but he was. I'm not saying that, you know, it doesn't mean you can't can him. It just means that, I mean, if it left to... people's imagination, they would just assume he was a Biden guy, but he's not. He's a Trump guy, right?
Well, he was appointed by Trump, but yeah. I don't think a lot of the Trump appointees were Trump people by any stretch. I mean, there's actually a pretty long list of people who I think Trump was pretty much told that he had to select from, and he did. I mean, they weren't necessarily first choices by any means, and not all of them proved to be good appointees or loyal appointees, and I would put Ray in that category too, and William Barr and a bunch of other people. So the fact that he was appointed by Trump doesn't mean that he was there to protect Trump by any means.
Well, I just hope we're not doing this devotion to Trump thing versus You take your oath for the country, not for him. I'm just saying, I hope he knows that. I think he does, but let's hope so.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, the criticism of Biden's, you know, pardoning his son yesterday was he's paterfamilias to the country, not just to the Biden family. So this is kind of a, well, I would, you know, where do you start with this? Did you read the statement on the, you know, the pardon? I mean,
no, I didn't.
It's typical magical thinking, you know, that he was unfairly targeted and that the plea deal that unraveled, you know, in July 2023 was a fair one. And all this pardon does is get the Biden family to the point where they hope to be if that plea deal had been accepted. But that deal had such sweeping language in it about giving Hunter Biden immunity for any crime he might have committed. This is, when this came out in the, you know, the discussion about the deal and the judge reneged on it, Biden got the result he wanted by putting that same sweeping language back into the pardon. You know, this goes to, it's an 11-year deal, so it's much longer than the pardon period that was covered when Ford pardoned Nixon after Watergate. And three of the years covered by it were when Biden himself was vice president, where there's a stinking mess of the Biden family, not just Hunter, but James Biden, Valerie Biden, nieces, nephews, all over the place who were feeding at the public trough. So while, you know, Biden engineered this deal to protect his son, there's a lot of other Biden family members who are kind of sitting there exposed, Biden himself included. So he may end up having to pardon himself. I don't know if the fact of his age is going to help him any more than it helped Mike Madigan or, you know, Eddie Burke in Chicago. The fact that you're 80 plus doesn't mean you're immune for prosecution. Biden dodged one bullet with the document scandal because he was too incompetent to stand trial, according to the special, you know, prosecutor. But I don't think that's going to help him in some of this other stuff. And I'll tell you, Tom, I mean, looking at the way the finances of the DNC and the Harris campaign have been playing out, and we haven't heard the last of that yet, I think there's an awful lot of financial wizardry and chicanery that involves the Bidens and Ukraine and Zelensky and a bunch of other people that we have yet to hear the last of. And it's a pattern now in the DNC going back to 2012 with, you know, Obama's second term, where he bankrupted the DNC. Hillary Clinton bailed the organization out and got control over the party and, you know, squeezed out Sanders. Talk about election interference.
Why do you suppose, Jan, that there's such a big difference between the two party constituency, and that, I mean, I don't know, I read this in several spots. Of course, I can't name where the hell I read them, but I just remember the substance. That a lot of people send money to the Republican National Committee just as a committee. And not very many people do that on the Democratic side. They only support a candidate. They don't support the committee or the party the same way the Republicans do. And so the Democratic committee is always in, they don't get that many checks. But if Hillary is able to raise money, she essentially bails them out, so they get on her side, same way as Obama would raise a lot of money. And I mean, the other Clinton.
Yeah, it's like a takeover of a business.
Well, it's not really, no, but I'm saying you're the one who's it's so weird, because when, what is going back? Oh, God, I don't even want to think about how many years. When Nancy Sheehan ran for treasurer in Illinois, it was when Don Clark Netsch got annihilated by, what the hell was the guy's name? Guy with a heart problem. And quit.
Oh,
Edgar. Did Edgar?
Edgar, Jay. Yeah.
So it was a Democratic Republican sweep. Nancy was probably in the lead. She probably would have been the only Democrat that won. And she ended up losing to the lady who just died, who ended up becoming controller too. What the hell was her name?
Oh, Lynn.
They thought Nancy was leading, and that she was going to win anyway. So they asked her to essentially bag her campaign stops and stuff the last weekend, and to give the party $20,000. You don't run and get money from the party as a Democrat. If you run and get your own money, they want some of it, which is totally different not totally, but quite a bit different than the Republican side, where people give money to the committee to support the candidates. For the Democratic side, they give money to the candidates if you like them, and the candidate's supposed to pony up for the party. You wouldn't think they'd be that different, but I think they are, and I don't know why. I mean, I don't know if that's been your experience, what you've heard as well, but that's my read of the thing, which is really kind of strange, isn't it? Are you there?
Sorry, Tom, just fielding a phone call, sir.
All right, you know, I'm saying that. I don't know why there's the difference there, but it appears there is.
I think, you know, and I've never read a good study comparing the, you know, propensity of Republicans to contribute to the national organization versus Democrats, but I do think the track record of the two organizations, going on maybe 20 or 30 years now, you know, says a lot about how people like the way the organizations spend the money. And I think that the Democrats have become, you know, fractured in that period to the extent that the DNC is this umbrella that's kind of being torn apart. It's not, it doesn't, you know, look good in the eyes of a lot of the grassroots contributors, and probably not to the bigger donors either, because it is trying to satisfy too many warring constituencies and trying to keep peace among, you know, all of these, you know, frayed edges. And I think, you know, this goes back really to 72, with the McGovern campaign, you know, where the convention was kind of a stinking mess as far as just exposing all of these, you know, really bold, you know, cracks in their front. You know, the ones that they were trying to, you know, show themselves as a unified party, and they were anything but. And I think as the DNC has tried to play this balancing act, they've lost their credibility as somebody who can manage money and dole it out according to the wishes of the donors, that you're going to make a good choice, but you're not going to just give it to the people who are owed favors or who are pulling strings behind the scenes. This is exactly what happened in 2016, and I think it would explain why there'd be a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of smaller donors. Why give the money to the DNC when people like Clinton or Sanders or anybody else can strong arm them? And, you know, Obama spent them into oblivion in 2012. It was never replenished. So, of course, you're going to have people feeling like, if I give money to the DNC and I want Sanders, it's pointless to give money to the DNC. I should just give it to his campaign. Well, and that's probably going to remain true.
I mean, I think there's a real...
Even more so after this election, which is just... It's one of the most... You know, Bernie Madoff and Sam Bankman-Fried were doing the same things that the Harris campaign was doing in promising results. But they do, you know, exactly how hollow these promises were.
Well, there's only, you know, it's like when Jackie Gleason stopped doing the Honeymooners. He said there's only like so many themes, right? I mean, there's only so many things people do. I mean, I actually read something a while ago about how America is incredibly difficult to govern because there are so many disparate people. I mean, there's groups that are just totally different from others. I mean, it's the same thing that's going to charge up the African Americans is not going to charge up, you know, this other group, or is it is opposite of somebody else? And the big guys want all the dough. Well, that's going to piss off everybody. I mean, it's a really tough group to sort of please. I mean, there's so many different spokes to the wheel.
Oh yeah, I think I may have even said on this program back in 2020, after the election, that even, you know, despite Biden's win, the Democrats would be facing a, you know, moment of truth in 2024, because the party was really dividing down the center line into camps that despise each other. So you had the ever, you know, more liberal and shrill wing of the party, and the moderates who were felt themselves either being pushed, you know, beyond the center or pushed to the Republicans. And it's going to be very hard to get a kind of unified front once that starts happening. True to form, that's one of the things that, I mean, Harris herself couldn't take credit for the things she had pushed for years.
Don't push that all on the Democrats. When Bush had all Republicans, he didn't do anything. When Obama had all Democrats,
it was mixed messaging, is my point, Tom.
Yeah.
the Democrats were trying to satisfy the looniest of the left and, you know, the more conservative mainstream Democrats that were reluctant to leave the party but felt themselves being pushed out. The Republicans, I don't think, are at that point now. That's not to say they won't ever be.
There's an awful lot of moderate Republicans that can't stand this guy.
But the messaging is, I think, pretty clear. Trump won out when it came to getting unified party support for things like the border.
Well, he had unified support that they all hated her. Duh.
Well, that too. I mean, yeah. What more unifying message than Kamala Harris?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But now I'm looking at, I just hope he doesn't, you know, basically screw himself before he's in. This guy for the FBI, when I'm reading about this guy, is this another Gates appointment? What is this?
Oh, Kesh Patel. I like Kesh Patel.
It doesn't surprise me, but I mean, I don't. The guy.
I mean, compared to Christopher Wray, I love him.
Well, I'm saying, but I mean, we're talking about a guy that is another one of these guys that the world is, you know, in 2016 I'm reading this thing that he claims he was the lead prosecutor on a case he wasn't even on. I mean, what is he talking about? He was some big time case and there was some foreign guy that he was a Houston case involving a Palestinian refugee who pleaded guilty to supporting ISIS. Federal judge dressed down but kicked him out of the chambers, according to court transcript. The guy puts himself down as a lead prosecutor. He wasn't even on the list of prosecutors. And now he's got this outfit called the. What is with these people in these foundations? It's like it sounds like he has a charity called the Cash Foundation. How neat is that, right? The Cash Foundation with a K, as a way of helping the needy and providing legal defense funds to whistleblowers and others. But the foundation has released few details about its finances. According to tax filings in 2023, revenue was $1.3 million last year, compared to $182,000 in 2022, so somebody's throwing cash at him. Much of the money coming from donations, okay? Foundation listed expenses of $674,000, so basically three-quarters of it, with about $425,000 spent on advertising and marketing. John, where do we find these people? Can't we just have anybody straight? Somebody who had, you know, a serious military experience, maybe was a really well-respected guy that ran a city police department, something. Can't we just hire somebody normal? Why do we have to get these people?
Normal is few and far between, Tom. Evidently, normal the way you and I would see it, anyway.
The guy's, you know, he's all in on the, you know, he's talking about routing all these people out of, you know, cleaning out all these civil servants, because it reminds me of McCarthy, for God's sake, when people start saying so. Patel vowed to go after conspirators who he claimed had abused their positions in government. Okay, well, that's interesting. I was talking to some lady today about the...
Well, you can start with the FBI, Tom, and Peter, like people like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who somehow hung on to their jobs when they were clearly in a conspiracy. They're not clearly.
It's stuff we all read from people.
How many thousands of text messages between them? I mean, there's absolutely no light between them and this agenda that had nothing to do with the FBI's mission in this, but they just took it upon themselves and had backing of the FBI to do it and had the nerve to go in front of Congress and brag.
Well, here's my issue.
I'd hope there'd be some mechanism to get rid of people like that. And believe
there's
me,
always somebody
to
get rid of, but here's my issue with this whole mess. When you start saying stuff like this and not just quietly cleaning, even the Biden pardon, which I find pretty bizarre, I was listening to a lady this morning saying, well, you know, when you come right down to it, nobody is prosecuted for having a gun on probation. You're just not, especially if you never used it for anything. I mean, everybody in this, especially younger people, and I talk to them a lot for whatever reason, they seem to like me, they think this entire criminal justice system is screwed up. Because they only go after people on both sides that they don't like. If you're trying to do anything for you, now they'll take care of if you get robbed, the police will show up and they'll do a good job. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of any of this other stuff, who gets charged, who doesn't, who steals money to white collar crime, Dan, everybody in this country is convinced it is totally political on both sides. Now, I don't know if they're as right as they think they are, but talk to Greg Pappas. He was on earlier. He thinks that anytime anybody gets charged on anything, somebody ought to like him. It reached that. So whatever both sides are doing, by pointing fingers at each other, they're basically blowing up people's confidence in this country. And I blame both sides for that. So the last thing I need is for some guy to come in and claim all these guys are all crooks. By the way, we'll put our crooks in. Nobody believes that this guy's going to clean the place out. He's going to change them from their thugs to our thugs. I mean, I don't want that. I'd like to have people. You should be able to be a Democrat or Republican, and when you show up to do your job at the FBI, you should do your job, in my opinion. Now, that's our world, John, but I guess our world isn't the way it is anymore. Did anybody ask, if your uncle or somebody was a policeman, what party he was in, as long as he did his job as a policeman? Now, I'd hope that he wouldn't say, you just stole this guy's car, but, by the way, you're a Democrat, so I'll let you go. I mean, I hope that never happened. I don't think it did in our time, or maybe we were just naive. I don't know.
The theory about the Hunter Biden thing and, whether, you have politicized select prosecution, whatever, if you pull back and look at the whole picture of this guy and the whole family, Tom, I mean, Hunter is no different.
You're
from
not going to get me to be a defender of the people in Washington that somehow have crossed the Rubicon and now it's all just all for them.
No, but the the idea that there is a weapons offense and he had hadn't ticked off the box that he was a drug user to get the license to carry the gun. Well, if the Democrats are so big on any kind of gun control provision that restricts access to guns, then they can start with Hunter Biden.
No, nobody is. Nobody wants anybody. Everybody wants nobody wants the background checks. Nobody wants anything. And the idea is, I want background checks. By the way, it should be 4 felonies and an IQ of 12 because I've got 3 felonies and an IQ of 13. But those are people. It's always going to be somebody other than you. Nobody believes that anybody should not be able to get a gun, John. No matter what. I mean, that's why you have the army. If they get rid of some guy for abusing his wife, they don't put him on the list. So when he goes to get a FOID card, he shows up. Nobody wants anybody to have anybody wants to be able to go get a gun wherever they want. And that's why
I think the gun charge and the tax case. Well, the IRS. Sat on the case to make sure that the statute of limitations ran out on a lot of the charges, but I think it was low-lying fruit. The bigger issues with Hunter Biden were that, and the family around him, that they were completely, in bed with entities they had no accountability to the public about. And I think the thinking may have been, if we can start probing at this level, that there's so much bigger stuff that this guy has gotten away with. And the pardon admits that because of the scope of it. This is a way of at least putting this guy under greater scrutiny because it is delicate to start going after the son of a sitting president. It's the first time in history it's happened. But I would say we've never had a family quite like the Bidens.
But we can't, the thing is, we can't do anything. As Duke Chapman used to say, we got water on both shoulders. You want to go to break here, out and talk about the real estate, which is maybe more fun to talk about. But in my opinion, if the dude got a whole bunch of money from Ukraine, say he did, if he didn't pay taxes on it, I'd put him right next to Al Capone, right?
Yeah, but it's not so much that; it's the influence, Tom.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, Jen,
it's the billions of dollars we're stuck forking over to Ukraine now, and the people in Ukraine and Russia are being killed because of this kind of waving the dollar bills.
I don't want to go on that road with 30 seconds left. What I'm saying
is, this is the price you pay for that kind of.
I don't think he started the war. But my point is, how can I put?
He profited and he pushed the taxpayers to the break over.
All right, okay, so I'm going to finish my point. If he'd have gotten a check from those guys for being on the board or where he was, and he didn't pay taxes on it, well, I have a problem with it. But then I got to sit there and go, wait a minute, Tom. Before you go after him, what about all the corporations that make money overseas, and they don't pay any tax on it?
I don't care about the taxes as much as they were buying influence, Tom. I don't care if he ever paid taxes. Wasn't the worst thing.
So we're talking about essentially a bunch of carpetbaggers, but the assumption you're making is they're all Democrats. If there's money going...
No, it's not all Democrats. But a lot of them were Democrats, and they're all, and Republicans too, profiting from that kind of influence.
How many people...
steered national, you know, geopolitical policy, Tom. And this is, you know, the corruption...
It always is. Well, unfortunately...
We've got a war being fought because people like the Bidens have been profiting from it.
I think the war's being fought because Putin invaded Ukraine, but that's another story.
Well,
hey, we won't
go there, Tom. Carl says it better than I can, so...
Well, I mean, I think that whenever... There's always money involved in this stuff. There's no doubt. And we always seem to be somewhere involved. I have a book John Lee gave me, The U.S. and the Middle East. And it goes back to, like, the first time, miraculously, the first time somebody popped an oil out of the ground over there, right? We've been involved in this forever, John. We were involved with the Mole Man. We were involved with all these people. I remember when we were, you and I were very young. I mean, I don't even think we were in college yet. When was, when were we doing all the hijacking and all that stuff? The Mole Man took over Libya, Muammar Gaddafi. And I remember, I think we were maybe just out of college. I'm reading the news, and I go, and it says, all people that are family or non-essential, something, please leave Libya. So, okay, was a lot of people leave. Then the next level was even family members. Well, the last day, we still had like 15,000 people there. Doing what? Making every nickel they possibly can, and finally, the last person got out of there with the last paycheck. We have people follow the dough, follow the oil. We've been doing this this is not new, Jen. I mean, we're all over the place.
Well, we've got a high profile family profiting from the destruction and rebuilding of Ukraine. It's other families besides the Bidens, but they're the most prominent.
What happens? And you know, Carl, without saying it, essentially explained to us when his buddy was the representative, and what did he do, 2 terms, and said, I got to get out of here, something like that. And somewhere along the line here, you're in Congress long enough to where you either say enough, and I'm not talking about term limits, but at some point you just get so much money from everybody that Trump is raising all holy hell for everybody. I don't see him saying a word about hospitals and pharmacies, do you? He's not going to take any of those people, huh? That's where all the money's going in this country. All the money's going there. Look at the money they're spending. I mean, somehow we have to corral that, or we're all going to be broke. And he's not even making a move that way, is he? Nobody has the balls.
Well, we don't know yet. But he's not even president.
But he didn't do it for 4 years. Bush didn't do it for 4 years.
RFK now, which I think that he took a real chance, you know, making that appointment
because he
knew how. Would trigger a lot of people.
But okay, but every senator, every
shot across the bow, if anything, that's all. I mean,
well, I'm saying we'll see if he actually. I hope he does. You know, I do.
It's likely not to be business as usual. That's as far as I can say.
Well,
I don't know what's been promised.
I don't. But how are you going to get all the money out of the back pockets of all the representatives and senators? Even if RFK comes up with something, they're not going to pass it.
Well, somebody's got to go at least as far as Trump did with that appointment, which nobody has before, not even Trump. So
we'll see. Yep. Maybe they'll compromise him. Who knows? SP Futures down a quarter, and as if he's up 32. Audrey's coming on. John, why don't you hang around? We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Matt Byrne on the board. S&P Futures down 75 cents. S&P Futures up 31 bucks. We were down pretty much all night this morning, but now we're rallying back here. We've been buying the dip pretty much. We've had a lot of mutual fund buying, a lot of believers. A lot of people think we're going to keep going up. We had November was a huge month, upside for the market. We'll see if it keeps going. Over in Europe, we're bullish over here in Europe as well. At least we were an hour ago. We still are. Europe stocks higher. CAC up 260, 1.3%. FTSE up 40.5%. CAC around up 24.3%, but big move in the DAX. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 304.8%, Hang Seng up 126.6%, Shanghai up 37.1%. So a big move in those markets. And Australia hit a record. We have to get their all-time high song back in pretty soon here. Dow was up 188 on Friday, S&P up 33, Nasdaq up 157. Somewhat typical for the day after Thanksgiving, but still it was pretty strong. Bonds up 3 basis points, 4.23. That has changed since an hour ago. The Bund up down 2 basis points, 2.06. Japanese up 1 to 1.07. Oil up 91 cents now, but still only 68.91. Brent up 92, 72.76. Natural gas down 19 cents, 3.17. Arbob up 2 cents, 192, but under 2 bucks by kind of a ways. Gold down 13 bucks, coming back a little bit. It was down 16. 26.67. Silver down 17 cents, 30.93. So that was down a little more as well. They're coming back a little bit. Copper down a penny, 4.12. Foreign exchange, U.S. dollar unchanged at 105 against the euro. Pretty much unchanged, 126.7 against the British pound. The yen, however, keeps weakening. It's up to 150.27. It's down to like 143 at one point. Now, when the yen goes up, it's really going down. Okay, it's different than the other two, as I mention every day. Crypto, down 1,200 bucks, 95,786. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:38 on December 2nd, 2024. Traffic in Chicago from O'Hare to Jane Byrne, it's 57 minutes inbound on the Kennedy, outbound at 23 minutes. Weather in Chicago, it's below freezing and clear skies this morning. 15 at O'Hare. Later today, a high of around 29 with a chance of flurries. Down in Phoenix, different story. 54 degrees and clear skies. Later in the day, high of 80 and sunny skies. In the NFL yesterday, week 13 of the 2024 season, yesterday saw the Vikings beat the Cardinals 23-22, and tonight the Browns play the Broncos at 7:15 p.m. Central Time. So I got Chief, back to you.
It is a little chilly this weekend, eh? But we've had such great weather. Yeah. Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed, yeah.
Bud, yes, how are you? We have Audrey and we have Jen. So, Bud, what's going on?
Morning, Jen.
Morning, Audrey.
Did we see Jen again this weekend? No, not again, eh? Just saying. Jen, did you have a good Thanksgiving? I forgot to ask.
Oh, I did. It was very quiet. My brother and family delayed it for a day because they had, their daughters coming in at different times. So, I ended up not going. I stayed here with my partner downstairs. So we had a very quiet, pleasant, good dinner. We both kind of cooked it. So,
Well, good for you.
It was nice. And you had a good one too, right?
Yeah, we went over my bros. They did a nice job, and he does a terrific job. And I mean, the guy's got so much stuff, you can't put it on the table. You don't even, whichever end you're on, you don't even get to eat the stuff at the other end. It's like, you know, he has like 10 different dishes. It's like something you'd see in a movie. But he loves it, so. And he has a nice group, and Aud was there. We had a nice time. And we had a nice show on Friday, so no, it was a good weekend. Everything was cool. I had a little issue with my truck, but I hustled it down to my guy in the south side who took me on Friday and fixed it, so it's nice to have people you can count on. You know, when you're going somewhere for 40 years, they take care of you. It's kind of one of those things. You would hope they would, at least.
So what? Hang on to that, though.
We had two things. I want to hear what odds, what's going on there. But, Jan, you sent me that thing, and Aud will be interested in this as well, about the Illinois Center and how they're not paying their... Who did they say left there? Some government agency had $1 million?
I think Health and Human Services, which had a huge amount of office space that they walked from, and went, I think, somewhere in the West Loop. I'm not sure the new address, but that put a huge hole in their rent roll. And that you just can't make up, you know. And in sort of the climate we are now, where it's about trimming the government, and again, I think that there'll be a lot of office space coming on the market as there's downsizing or complete closures of operations in some places. But, you know, the Illinois Center is a big deal, you know, space-wise, you know, right near, you know, the center of everything. So to have that go into foreclosure is a very ominous sign.
I've never been in that building. I may have walked through it to get to one of the hotels and stuff over there, but
it's not a particularly pleasant place. I mean, the whole planning of it is pretty cold. It needs some kind of warmth and plantings and stuff. And you got the Fairmont Hotel kind of squeezed in there, which is a pretty building, but you can't really see it for all the steel and glass around you. So I think it was kind of a missed opportunity when it came to developing the site. But nevertheless, it was, you know, a huge operation, and to have it, you know, start shedding tenants now, going into default on its mortgage, is a bad sign. Because if it can happen to that, it'll happen to a lot of other buildings before.
Well, just in terms of esoterics, I know, I'd love you to comment on this. The nice thing about, well, traditionally the nice thing about downtown Chicago, now it's, you know, we've got all kinds of different issues, but the nice thing about it is, it's the transportation hub. You can get, especially for government employees, a lot of whom don't make all that much. I mean, it's not like they don't make anything, but, you know, they make okay. But to be able to get here, you know, for $2 each way or whatever the monthly pass is a huge deal. You don't need a second car in the family, or you don't need a car in the family, really. It's, now, to shuck all that and go to the West Loop, which, you know, it's become sort of the hot spot in a lot of ways, but the transportation is nowhere near there like it is here. I mean, that's what I think buried Sears. They lost their traditional people that worked in the Sears Tower when they moved out to Hoffman Estates. Most of the people didn't go with. They lost their flavor of who their customer was. I mean, what do you think? I mean, how do you take a governmental building and move it to where the public transportation doesn't serve it when you've got, what, 1,000 employees? I mean, how do you just do that?
I don't know. I think a lot of people want to drive their cars. And I mean, public transportation is the last thing in the world I want to do, but that's me. I want my own company in the morning and my car. So if you moved me out to the suburbs where I could pull into the parking lot and walk into the building, I'd be far happier myself.
Well,
I'm a bad example, but the idea of... when I was young and I worked downtown and I get in the cattle cars that they called buses and subways with crazy people on it. They were crazy then too, not as lethally crazy as they are now, but it was a horrible experience. There was nothing fun about it. So, nope, sign me up with my own car in my own parking lot. Thank you.
I'm saying Aud was not the right person to ask Jan that question, just saying. You know. You think?
Yeah, no heating, no heating in the winter, no air conditioning in the summer, and you're jammed in like a sardine. Yeah, that was great central transportation. Yeah. It's perfect.
Well, that was before, what Aud's talking about is Aud used to take the Archer Express. This is a little bit of a Chicago story, but before there was an orange line, Archer Avenue had the Archer Express, and it only stopped where there was another bus line. and they used to actually, they had these big, huge buses. They were bigger than the ones now. They're flexible coach. In downtown, they would have, you get in the front, you could pay up there. They also had a guy open the back door, and you could pay him, and they'd shove you on the back. So the things were absolutely laden with people when they'd leave downtown, and you could only, and then you'd get off at Kedzie or Western, wherever the hell you were. But I mean, that Archer Express carried more people than the Ravens would else, John, in those days. Remember?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
it had buses down Western that went down Archer too. You know, from like.
That's right. The Archer bus was always, but the L's are still jammed with up. So Tom's little like daydream of taking public transportation down is like so out of touch with the world. I can't even.
Well, you're missing the part about the,
tell you that.
You're missing the part about the Rock Island, the Burlington, and those things. The Metro Rail.
Yeah, well, it's all okay, but I have to tell you, as anybody who commutes every day, it's still not that much fun when you got to drive to the train and get on the train and then walk to work.
I think what we're going to do is we're going to point Aud to the board of the RTA, Jen? I think maybe not.
We need to balance the opinion.
Well, no, I'll tell you what, I was going back to taking the bus when it was 110 degrees in the summer. People were sweating over you and there was no air conditioning. I could remember promising to myself that I would make enough money that I would never get on public transportation again in my life.
I don't mind the train at all. Anyway, what's going on in the real estate world? You're in a few more on the market, or I know you had one this weekend that a whole bunch of people showed up and everybody's trying to buy it from you.
Yep, nobody near a train or a bus either. Yep.
God, they're not that far from the train or the bus, for God's sake.
It's still a busy season, depending on your product. They had a nice product to sell this weekend. A lot of people interested in it, so we sold within 2 days. So that's a good thing. So,
it was. Let me know what kind of a house and who do you think was it bought by a younger couple? I saw the place, Sam, from the outside anyway. When I showed me pictures, it was a small bungalow in. I guess what do you want to call it? West Beverly, St. John Fisher Parish. And it was, it was a starter home and a reasonable price. And it was pretty much remodeled, and a lot of people couldn't wait to get in. So it's, I guess that was something you predicted, Aud, but there's people looking for a lot of stuff in different areas. And but there's more on the market now than there were, right, Aud? But still not a lot.
Yeah, there's a little more, but it was nice about 4 weeks ago, interest rates had actually ticked up into the high fives, and then all of a sudden in the last two and a half weeks, we're back up over seven. We're up like 7.25, 7.5. So there was a big rush, in October, November, that little break of time. And then we bounce back up, but people are still looking, and they're hoping that they'll be able to refinance next year, and interest rates come down a little bit. So, but no, there's still a market, and people are still looking to get in. You got to live somewhere, and if like this really cute little house that I sold is still way cheaper than trying to rent something, and because there's also a shortage in the rental market. So if you can buy something, you're still ahead of the game.
Audrey, are you seeing any changes because of the commission structure after the NAR settlement, or is this affected your negotiations?
Well, it's a pain in the butt, and NAR threw us under the bus, and they're not my favorite subject. But I think that people are adapting and working with it, and we were just having conversations before, that's all. So it's a conversation, but just tell people that it hasn't really changed my much for me. I mean, it's everybody has their own way of doing it. So, my world is okay. I'm just telling what my clients are willing to do. Willing to pay for services, and everybody has their own, but it doesn't seem to be a big change, I don't think. I think I've always had a discussion with my clients about it, so it's not like it's changed my world much. I try to be as thorough as possible discussing everything with people about a real estate deal. But I haven't heard too much blowback in my area. I can't speak to any other areas. But
well, wasn't that case more for a few of the real big companies? You know, well, Coldwell Banker is probably one of the biggest. They were, you know, adamant for years and years about this is our commission and that's it, my way or the highway. But independent people like you have been competitive in negotiating commissions forever, right?
Yeah, well, everybody, every office is free to set what their agents do, and that's the thing. It's like I have my own company. I charge what I charge. Call a Baker charge what they charge, but it's such a complicated subject, and what people don't understand is because they watch House Hunters is that this is all about the buyer agents, and the government thought they did buyers such a great service because they're like, oh, buyers could pay the commission. What buyer could pay a commission out of their own pocket when they're struggling for a down payment? So it made it harder for poor people, you know, who have less funds to disperse around. But I think that what the short-sightedness of everybody involved in this case, and let me tell you that right now, nobody in the realtor association ranks has ever, in the upper echelon, has ever sold real estate. It's a private corporation. It no longer is like an arm that exclusively is out for our good. It's a for-profit company that's been sold a couple times. So it's not like we all can control it. It's very different than what the public perception is. So they were sold to a company. Realtor.com was sold off because we were all busy working years ago and didn't pay attention to the, got sold off to a company called Move Inc. And now it's got sold again under an umbrella. So it's not like it is all representing our wishes. Our dues have quadrupled. I don't think that but the things they spend money on are things that I would direct my funds a lot of time to be spent on. But what they forget is that I don't take a client out, show them three houses, and they pay cash for a big amount of money. So what we're doing is saying, okay, you buyer's agent, you sold this person the house, so you're not worth anything. Well, maybe, as in my case, I've carted a buyer around for 6 months, 12 months. One of my buyers right now, I've been working with for over 2 years. So the commission that I get is, if you really break it down, I don't know too many people are going to work for 22 cents an hour. And after dragging somebody around for 3 years, trying to find out something that they want, even 6 months, 6 months of your time and combing the internet and the MLSs for homes to look and scheduling the homes and taking people there and doing the research on them, there's a value on this that was never addressed in these lawsuits. So what they've done is devalue my time and assume that everything is that you two spent an hour with somebody. And that's just not what the real world is in real estate, especially in a competitive market for buyers as it has been the last few years. It is really tough to get your client out there and get them a home that 20 other people want to. So it doesn't really take into the reality of how much work realtors put in. I mean, Tom knows.
How
old when I worked, I missed dinner yesterday almost because I was out with a client, which is fine. That's my choice of career. But the amount of work that realtors put in and pay for all their own expenses for everything, most people don't understand how much work it truly is, and you have to love it to do it.
But Jan, dinner was a little late, so she was just in time. Just saying.
It's a good thing, because I was starving.
But, you know, it's so bizarre. I mean, I look at way back how many years ago, I actually had a real estate license, and my cousin had a place, and I guess he still does. The way me being, you know, the competitive markets guy that I am, the whole thing was so screwed up to me, and I don't think these guys fixed it. But the weird part of the business, and I'll just say something crazy here, but, I mean, if Aud or anybody lists a building or a house or whatever, they you're expected, you pay for all the advertising and all the pictures and all the other stuff. And everybody says, oh, man, you shouldn't be making, you know, whatever percent. okay, without putting words in your mouth, I'd act like you're not here. I would much, if I was making, 2 or 3% if I sell the place, 2 or 2.5% probably, I would much rather say, okay, your advertising, the pictures, the drone, all the stuff you want me to do, the staging. By the way, you give me $3,000 for that up front, I'll be happy to work for less on a percentage, because what if I don't sell it? I'm out of pot. It's kind of crazy that on the one side, the buyers expect you to haul their ass around for 2 years, and maybe they won't ever buy anything. And yet on the other side, they expect you to pay for all the stuff up front, and then everybody bitches about the commissions. I mean, what am I wrong with this, John? How weird it's set up, or was set up.
No, this is what always floored me about, how buyers, not that they were abusive people, but they did abuse their broker relationships, because there was no exclusivity. You could go to another broker, unbeknownst to the first one you were working with, get a sale with them, so you've just watched your whole possibility of making a commission evaporate. And there were no protections against it at all. So that always struck me as the biggest possible runaround in being, a real estate agent, was when you got, poked in with a buyer who didn't owe much allegiance to you and certainly wasn't going to pay you anything, but expected you to, burn gas and spend time and get dressed up and, do what you thought the client would want. And they just sat back and, waited to the right moment when they wanted to make an offer, and then you might make a commission. But you, as you say, Audrey, that could take years.
Well, it's like me helping somebody out with their portfolio somewhere and having them do the trade through Coinbase or somebody, Rapid Trade or someplace. I mean, what's the point?
Well, now also part of the deal was that before it was a suggestion, and now we have to have a signed buyer's broker agreement. And a lot of clients, they don't want to sign it.
No.
They don't want that. And sometimes you have to, say, okay, I offered it to them. You can't make them, sign, and a lot of people will just back away from it. So you have to note that, they offered, signed, client, refused, does not want to be exclusively represented. So, it made it just more difficult. It's not an easy business, and you really have to love it. And it just made it tougher for people. It made it tougher for the people they thought they were trying to help, basically.
Right. But it's not an easy business, but it's gotten easier for you, because I'm going to say 90% of your stuff is referrals, or stuff you've done for people before, and they were happy with it, and it's family members, everybody, it calls you. So after 25 years of hard work, it's now gotten easier because everybody knows you. But God, 25 years is pretty tough, what? Right?
Yeah. Well, it's like your business. I've built up a clientele over the years, and it's been more than 25. We won't say how many years it's been, but I mean, I've had my clients when I was much younger, and they bought something, and then they've come back and maybe bought something else. They've moved up, traded up. Now I'm on to the kids, and we're doing them. And on this occasion, I've got some of the grandkids. So, yes, I mean, I would say right now my business was running probably about 80% referrals for the last few years. And I'm grateful that my other clients liked me and trusted me enough and thought I did a good enough job to come back to me. But I've had some families, I have some big Irish families where I've maybe sold them 10, 12 homes over the years. So that's a blessing to me, and I'm grateful for them. But it is like any other business you're in for a long time, whether you're a dentist or a doctor or a lawyer, it's a business involving your life. And if you're trusted by your clients, it's probably the biggest compliment I can get when they return to me.
What is anybody to your knowledge? I mean, you don't spend your time figuring out what other people are doing, but has anybody in your knowledge taken these new rules and said, okay, the hell with the old thing? If I'm going to show you houses from 9 to 12, I want $1.50 an hour. And by the way, you owe me $4.50 for my
time.
You
can do that.
I mean, anybody's done that?
You can literally do whatever you want. As long as you communicate to the client, they understand, if they understand the structure, they sign up for it, you sign up for it. You want to charge by the hour, you can certainly do that.
You know anybody who has?
I actually do know a couple people who were doing that. with some clients because they were just, it was a different kind of situation. It was like somebody shopping for somebody who was infirm and trying to set up a type of barrier-free housing in an area where the family was. So it was taking such a big deal, they just actually hired somebody to take over the whole process. So it was a different thing.
When I used to do expert witness stuff, I always got a retainer. I mean, John, imagine when you did research for people, you did too, right?
Yeah, I mean, you negotiated. You know, I didn't have a published fee schedule or anything, but I think, you know, it would be possible to do that. Then you have, of course, a whole layer of bookkeeping and billing that you have to build into that too, but it's better than just, you know, giving your services away. So
it's so
weird. The old thing that be careful what you wish for with this new rule change is everybody that you have to sign up for, I need your Visa card first for, you know, a security deposit of $5,000. People might not like that either.
I was a little too direct with a, I don't know if Aud was there, I was giving a lecture in Las Vegas to a lot of traders, and we're talking about, you know, I was talking about what PTI does and how we help people out, and the guy goes, wow, the, you know, I should, like, go through you guys. And then you are you charged the same as, you know, E-Trade or someplace? And I go, no. I said, if I come to you, what are you, a dentist? And he goes, yeah. I said, what if I come to you and we just talk about some stuff? And by the way, should I have to pay you? Well, yeah. I said, well, you don't get to talk to my brother for free. How do you want to pay him? If you don't want to pay any commission, well, fine. I guess nobody does it in our industry either. That's what I'm talking about. Odd. I mean, Dan, he does more talking to clients than I do, but I mean, he could be, what, if the attorney picks up the phone, it's $150, right, Jan? I mean, I don't know anybody in our industry that does it that way, but you can't expect people to work for nothing either when you don't want to, right? I mean, I said to the guy, well, you don't get to talk to him for free, and he looks at me like I had three heads. Well, I go, you don't do any dental work for free, do you? And the guy goes, well, no. I said, well, duh. I mean, you know, it's you know, when other people try and tell people in an industry that's not theirs how they should be paid, they inevitably screw it up, don't they? It seems.
That's exactly what they're doing, so.
It's a crazy one. Like, you know, in our business, it used to be you got paid for execution, and we would, our big thing when we started was we would go to the exchange with the best price, we would call down to the trading floor, right to the crowd and the broker when you still had a crowd. But now, nobody, the execution, the customer is the person on the other side who's paying for the order flow. They take your order is now the asset, and they go to the highest bidder to get it filled. I mean, we don't do that. But other people do, and they're crazy enough. I mean, Aud sold his house to these people. They happen to be of Greek descent. And the dad, Jan, you should see me talking to the dad. Was he even 5 feet on? And he found out he was
adorable.
He was the greatest guy. And he, you know, he'd owned a couple of businesses and stuff. Real nice guy, but he was a trader. And he was telling me about how he trades through, I think it was Robinhood or somebody. He goes, everything's free. It's free. It's free. And I go, it's not really free. And he goes, what do you mean it's not free? And I said, you know, I said, you've been in business a long time. I mean, I know a little bit about your story. I said, who is your customer? And he goes, well, the guy that pays me. And I said, okay, if you're not paying him, who is? The other guy on the other side of the trade, who's his customer? And he goes, you know, I never thought of it that way. I go, well. He goes, yeah, I guess I'm not his customer. The guy who's getting my order, it must be his customer. The guy picked it up instantly. He just never had it explained to him like that. I mean, what a great guy. I mean, boy, what a nice family. And I've met some of the people that she's done. I'm pretty much trying to keep my nose out of it because I'll just screw up. But I've met some of the people she does business with. Boy, some of the nicest people you ever met, Jan. It's a great group. I mean, I feel that way about my clients. You know, so it's nice when you do business with nice people. Now, what did you use to, when you were an attorney, what did you use? Were a bunch of criminals that you dealt with or what?
Nice criminals, though.
Nice
criminals.
White collar galore.
Anyway, thank you, thank you, John. SP Futures up $1. NASDAQ Futures up 41. Looks like we're after a little bit of a downturn last night, we're back on our winning ways. We'll see if that keeps going all week or all month. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
That's all, folks.